little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
David, thank you for coming back. Last time we spoke about the options of what might work for an arthritic type of pain, pain in joints, and pain that's not affecting a nerve, so trapping a nerve or damaging nerve. And we're now going to talk a little bit more using a very powerful tool that we've got a link to on realgeneralpractice.org called the CTOP tool for comparing treatment options for patients who have neuropathic pain, so pain where a nerve is either irritated or pressed on or damaged. And I think that that would put you in a much better position to be able to manage the pain that you get when you've got pain in your neck that goes down your arm, and the pain that you get from your sciatica, and potentially also the burning pain that you also get in your feet that we haven't found an obvious cause.
And I didn't think that would be neuropathic, you say. I thought...
And it probably isn't, you know, but it's hard to know for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But sometimes it's worthwhile for long-term pain using this family of medications, because they can sometimes work really well for long-term pain, and they might be safer and less habit-forming or more useful to you with less risks than the other options for short-term pain. So chronic or long-term pain is a special group. We're not going to go into too much detail about that, but we're going to focus today, but we're going to focus our attentions towards what works for nerve irritation pain.
Yeah.
And we'll go through the pros and cons using the CTOP tool. So go to realgeneralpractice.org, go to the patient resources, click on or type in pain. You'll come up with all the pain resources, and it's the CTOP tool for comparing treatment options for neuropathic pain. Go to the little icon of the planet on the right-hand side. So all of the icons on the right-hand side are what you need to click on.
So they're all clickable then?
The ones on the right-hand side are clickable. Yeah. So click on those, and that will take you to this tool for comparing the treatment options for pain. At the top of, well, on the left-hand side, you have medication options. We've already spoken about things that aren't medication that work for pain. And some of those will work very powerfully for neuropathic pain, but we're going to focus most of our efforts today on medications and look at the evidence of what works, how likely is it to work, and what are the risks of using each treatment option.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that you're going to share your own insights about your own experiences
with some of them,
with some of them as well. So the first one, they're almost in order of how likely they are to be effective, but not quite. So amitriptyline is at the top for a reason, because it's one of the medications that's been around for the longest. It originally was developed as a treatment for depression and anxiety.
I was put on them late 90s.
Yeah.
I was on them for a while.
Okay. It's a really useful treatment for pain and for sleep, and also works very well still for depression and anxiety. It's not normally a first-line treatment in people that have got a risk of self-harm and suicide, because when taking an overdose, it is very dangerous to the heart.
Right.
So it needs to be kept safe.
Yeah.
So that can sometimes be a consideration. We're looking at taking 100 people like you who've got neuropathic pain, so pain, burning pain. It could be burning pain that you've got it in your feet, or it could be an electric shock pain or a severe sharp pain that goes down a limb that makes you think your nerve has been trapped.
Yeah.
Those sorts of pains.
Yeah.
Anyway, it very helpfully, this tool tells us that a 30% reduction in pain is a worthwhile pain reduction. So if you take your pain score down from, let's say, if it was 10 out of 10, and you've brought it down to a 7, you've got a worthwhile improvement in pain.
Oh, yes.
So that's the sort of improvement that we're looking for to say that it's significant. Now, bear in mind, you already get a decent improvement with any placebo, any chalk tablet, any type of therapy gives you some benefit. And in this table, we're finding that 25% of people, 25 out of 100 people, will get benefit whatever treatment we give them.
Yeah.
And on top of that, then amitriptyline will give benefit to another 25 people. So in this group of patients, we'll find that 50% of them get that 30% improvement.
Because of the placebo and...
Because you add them together.
Got
That's really worthwhile.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include the people that get 15% improvement.
Yeah.
and the 15% improvement was good for you. It was worthwhile for you.
Yeah.
So we're being fairly modest in saying this is the potential that it can benefit people. But I don't know if you're going to be one of these people that doesn't benefit at all, or whether you're going to get more. Get 90% improvement or 100% improvement with this painkiller. I just don't know that. Sometimes you have to suck it and see to know that.
Yes.
But there are downsides. And the downsides are that, particularly if you start on too high a dose, you might get a dry mouth. Was that an issue? You didn't notice it?
No.
As long as we start on a low enough dose, most people tolerate that really well.
Yeah.
And we tend to give it on a night time because that's when you don't notice it so much.
Yeah.
Sleepiness. Well, I actually use this quite a lot for patients that aren't able to sleep well because it gives a good quality of sleep.
Yes.
And what we're aiming for is for them not to be drowsy the following day.
Yes.
If they're drowsy the following day at the time they would normally wake up, they're probably on too high a dose, in which case we need to adjust the dose.
Yeah.
Those are the most common things. With elderly patients and we give them too high a dose, they're more likely to fall over. Their balance may not be so perfect.
Yeah.
So again, we need to think about using much smaller doses, particularly in older people, and very slowly increasing it to make sure that... But to be fair, there's only 16% of people can't tolerate amitriptyline and can't manage it because of side effects. There's still potentially 40 or 50% of people that don't get enough benefit to want to use it for long enough.
Yes.
But oftentimes the benefit that you get from this medication takes a while to build up in your system. So I would initially aim for giving you a decent night's sleep, making sure that you don't have any side effects, and slowly increasing the dose until you get benefit for sleep and then potentially benefit for pain. But don't expect it's going to happen overnight. So those are the main consideration when it comes to would amitriptyline be worthwhile. And that would usually be for people that have got burning or electric shock type pain. I would go, that would be my normal drug to try out first for most patients. Unless patients have said, I've heard all about it and I'm scared of it for the whatever reason. And then I'll try and correct their misunderstandings of their concerns and say, well, if you're not keen on taking it, let's just give you a little nibble on a tablet. So you can chop the tablet into quarters or even just lick a tablet and then try it out and make sure that you're okay with it and then slowly increase the dose. Now, most people can tolerate it. It's rare for people not to tolerate it as long as you get the right dose.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the right dose is until you've been on it.
That's right.
So sometimes a quarter of a tablet, sometimes even less than that. It's relatively safe apart from these older patients or these patients where you don't want them to have a large supply because they might potentially take their own lives or harm themselves because of that. And it does interact with other medications. So your own doctor would have to weigh up whether that was the right medication for you. So that's the number one potential treatment that's got the best evidence for working. A lot of people, the reason that this one is, so cannabinoids, is second in line is not because it's the second most useful treatment, but it's one of those treatments that a lot of people ask their doctor about.
That's not
nowadays.
You're not talking about marijuana and things like that, are you?
Yeah,
or
well,
CBD.
Potentially medical marijuana. I certainly wouldn't recommend.
I've never taught. I've never
THC because that has potential other side effects, including hallucinations, and potentially you can get quite paranoid with taking THC. So I wouldn't recommend marijuana because it also causes lung cancer when you smoke it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it also is not safe. But a lot of people ask me about medical marijuana. And as you say, that would be CBD oil in various different preparations.
I have read about it, but I haven't tried it.
Yeah. It tends to be a last-ditch thing.
Yeah.
So people, it is not cheap.
Very expensive.
It's not available on prescription.
Nope.
But a lot of people try it and they want to ask me whether it's worthwhile trying. Well, this is what I share with them about, is it worthwhile trying? It's one that's way down the pecking order because number one, it's not very effective. It'll work above placebo in only 9% of people, which isn't very good when it comes down to it. And it causes significant harms as well. So sleepiness is a prime problem. And it doesn't seem to have that long-term benefit. You can take it off a night. It might help you to get off to sleep.
That's right.
But
you've got to continually take it
throughout the day as well to get that continued benefit for pain. So there's no suggestion that it's a good treatment for that.
Yes.
some people feel high. Now, is that a bad thing or a good thing?
Well, there's always a lure to a high, though, isn't there?
Potentially, you know what I mean? Potentially. So you could get emotionally hooked on it, and it could cause harm by you being inappropriate in feeling high. So if you're intoxicated, and 35% of people are feeling high, then you're not safe to drive.
No, you shouldn't be driving
with CBD oil. Speech disorders, it can make you slur your speech, not be so aware of your speech. And that happens in a third of people. Again, a third of people are dizzy with it as well. So it's not a very effective treatment, and it's also a risky treatment.
Yeah.
And it's not one that I recommend to many people. The next one down the pecking order here is a medication called duloxetine. Now, duloxetine is commonly used in patients that have diabetes and neuropathic pain related to their diabetes. And it's sold by drug companies as being something that's really useful for patients with diabetic neuropathy, so damage to nerves caused by diabetes. And it has some evidence. It's got a 13%, so it's slightly better than medical marijuana, so 13% improvement above placebo. And its side effect profile is relatively okay, and maybe 20% or 23% here would get significant nausea with this medication. Yeah. Again, it sometimes takes a while for this to build up in the system, but it might be something reasonable to try out if you were diabetic and amitriptyline didn't seem to be the right choice for you.
Yeah.
It can be helpful. I emphasise, with all these types of treatment, where there's not been a substantial improvement or a worthwhile improvement, then it's worthwhile stopping them.
Yeah.
And usually I would go for very low doses in the first instance, because the benefit usually comes from the low dose, and the risk of side effects usually comes from much higher doses.
Yes.
And there's very little additional pain benefit to be gained out of increasing that dose beyond that. So we then come down the pecking order to gabapentin. And this is actually higher up in the pecking order than the duloxetine. So gabapentin can work for pain, but it has substantial problems. And it is rather habit-forming. It's not as bad as pregabalin when it comes to being habit-forming, but pregabalin has a tendency to be difficult to stop. It can help pain, and certainly if you've got neuropathic pain that's disabling and amitriptyline hasn't been a worthwhile treatment, then I think it's reasonable to be trying a medication like gabapentin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are risks, and it's not addictive to everybody, but there's a substantial minority of patients that are difficult to get off this class of medication.
Yeah.
And that's above and beyond the benefit for pain. So even after the painful condition is gone, it can then be difficult to stop this medication.
Yeah.
So stopping it and going cold turkey is not always easy.
Mm-hmm.
And psychologically, you might find that there's a dependence on it too.
Yeah.
And it can affect functioning. So it can, in a small minority, cause dizziness or balance problems or sleepiness. But it's usually relatively well tolerated, to be perfectly honest with you. But it's just at higher doses, then you're much more likely to have side effects. So at lower doses, it's reasonable to be using. And I would usually say that when you go to a pain clinic, a lot of pain specialists would often recommend that you go up higher and higher in the dose. I don't normally recommend that. I say use the dose that is useful without causing side effects.
Yes.
If you need it.
Yes.
And there's very little additional benefit in taking higher doses. And gabapentin works similarly to amitriptyline, that you'll get the majority of the pain-killing benefit by just taking a nighttime dose and not taking the daytime dose that will make you drowsy.
Yes.
So that can be a really useful additional treatment. Further down the list that we've got here, we come to the potential benefit with something like morphine or oxycodone for severe pain. And you can see here that compared to the gabapentin, you've got very similar numbers in terms of absolute benefit. So in terms of dealing with the pain effectively, you'll get a very similar benefit with gabapentin.
Yeah.
And there's a different side effect profile. They are very risky in terms of habit forming.
Yeah,
they're very addictive, and they are difficult for people to stop. Not in every case, but in a substantial minority. And we're probably talking less than 20% of people would have problems coming off it.
Yes.
But some people have addictive personalities, and if you're a heavy drinker or your doctor's been concerned about misuse or use of substances in the past, maybe that's not the right treatment for you to be taking. Maybe we should be looking for safer, non-addictive options. And the amitriptyline really is one of those ones which doesn't seem to be habit-forming, but it seems to be really helpful for a large number of people with pain. So opiates are there, opioids are there. They're helpful for 18% more than placebo are, but they have substantial problems with potential constipation, sleepiness, nausea, dizziness, and are quite habit-forming potentially. So it's rare for them to be high up the list. We've already mentioned the drawbacks of pregabalin.
They are similar.
Pregabalin and gabapentin are from the same stable. They're essentially a very similar drug. If anything, pregabalin is more difficult for people to stop and has no additional benefits. So usually I would go for, if we're going to use one of that class of medication, gabapentin is slightly safer. But it's neither of them are more effective. But we often find that if gabapentin hasn't worked, people will be tried on pregabalin, but it's no more likely to be effective. And if any of these medications haven't been useful, and when I say useful, I'm talking, I'd like to see 30% improvement, but I'll tolerate something that's useful to the patient. And then we've also got a way to actually check the pros and cons of all the treatments together and compare them together. So you click on all treatments of all different medications, and you'll, at a glance there, see that where it comes to the numbers, amitriptyline seems to be the most useful medication in terms of helping more patients. But it's also less habit-forming than most of the other medications and safer than most of the other medications, as long as it's used at the right dose. Is there anything that you want to clarify on that?
I've been on the amitriptyline, like the late 90s. And even back then, I can remember having really, really, really bad nightmares. And I mean, like kicking out and... screaming even, really. I call them terrormares because, honestly, you wake up and you are petrified. It wasn't that long ago I was put back on them on a very, very low dose, but I'm just so sensitive to them when it comes to that. You know what I mean?
It's so crucial to get the dose right because you tend to be quite anxious about a treatment where you've had bad side effects. And tying the tiniest of little doses and then slowly, slowly increasing it until you get benefit in terms of sleep and then potentially benefit in terms of pain can take some time before you get it right. So
it
don't
was,
be
it
a
was
rush.
A very, very low dose I was on. It might have been you that put us on. I'm not sure.
And the terramers, have they come back on the very low dose? No.
Well, yes. Yes, they did. But
and then you back off with the dose.
Back off with the dose. I had to stop them because of them. Even the smallest of doses, the very, very smallest of doses, for some reason, I don't know. I don't think it was psychological.
No.
You know, I wasn't expecting to get terramers and things like that. But
so in terms of discontinuation for amitriptyline, we still find that 16% of people end up stopping the medication. And I would say half of those, if we'd got the dose right in the first instance, started them on a small dose, they wouldn't have ended up having problems.
I would probably be still on them if I wasn't getting the terramers, what I call.
Because they were useful for the pain, but they caused side effects, which were unpredictable, and they're very individual. So I would say in the order of, as long as we're starting the dose very slowly and slowly increasing it, we can get 90% of people to tolerate it, to at least find out whether it's a useful treatment or not. But it's not always going to be helpful. Okay. Any more questions related to...
No, that's fine. I mean, like, the gabapentin that I'd been on was... It's the same sort of feeling when you're on opioids. Like, when I was on the buprenorphine, it's almost as if you've got a cloud in your head and you just... You kind of find your way about in it.
That's a really useful description.
Very strange.
Feel a bit foggy with it.
Yes.
And particularly if you're taking high doses, or particularly if you're taking doses during the day, you'll get more of the side effects.
You couldn't articulate a decent conversation. You know what I mean? You couldn't get your words out.
Now you're moving forward with the support of the pain team. A lot of that's going to be down to distraction therapy, which means focusing on being active and understanding your pain and being confident that there's ways of dealing with your pain. But there's tools back on the main website. If you go back to realgeneralpractice.org and then go through that to Live Well with Pain website. Yeah. And that's full of all sorts of practical resources for other
people. I've got it pinned.
Perfect. Okay, when should we catch up again? Why don't we touch base in, say, a couple of weeks' time from now, on a Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday, you make a telephone appointment to speak to me and say, I've digested what we talked about when I last spoke with you, Dr. Birrell, and I've also looked at some of the resources that we've shared online on the website, and I quite like the sound of doing this, that or the other. And then we can figure out with a bit more consideration what would work best for you at this point. Yes.
Right. When I went to see the biomechanics, she gave me a booklet, which I would recommend if you could get a hold of, for osteoarthritis.
So osteoarthritis off the foot, and it's a biomechanical leaflet.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you would be so good,
I would try and fetch it in so you can get the
details. If you can give me the details, and what I'll do is I'll put a link to the website if we can do that. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Perfect.
Also, it was very, very informative.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
It's good.
Thank you so much for your time, David.
Let's hear it for our GP.